Welcome to AmvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the AmvA community. In this episode, we hear from Steve Gordon, Director of the California DMV, discussing online services and California's virtual field office. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Ian. And you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you joining us for this edition of AmvaCast, our new podcast series. We're just in the process of rolling it out. So when folks are listening to this episode, it'll be one of the very early episodes of this new series, which I think is appropriate for some of the things we're going to talk about with some of the real changes and technology innovation that you've brought out to the California DMV. I know that's been a big push of yours, and you've bringing together a great team. And that's kind of what I wanted to just jump right in and talk about. So many folks are looking at major shifts in the way we do business in the motor vehicle space as we respond to the COVID emergency. California has really rolled out some innovative approaches. I think most notably, the virtual field office is a real new concept that that California has blazed the trail on. Do you mind just kind of jumping in and tell us how that idea came about to say, let's create a virtual field office?
Yeah, I think like, you know, many other ideas, it's a hallway conversation where we're discussing, you know, how do we get social distancing? How do we keep people safe? And at the same time, how do we, you know, use our resources so they can actually do productive work from wherever they were? And many of us came out of the sort of ITSM world. You know, we had worked in IT, we had run networks and done services and so on. So ticketing and so on was not a foreign concept to us. So we were brainstorming this. We said, well, what if we just set up a ticketing system? And then my chief technology officer, Ajay Gupta, said, hey, virtual field office. And that name sort of stuck. But in effect, I mean, it really is a ticketing system that most other businesses, you know, if you're an IT shop or if you have Comcast cable or AT&T, you've used these systems before, but haven't really thought about sort of this remote support model from a DMV and a public service perspective. So that's where the idea was born. And then we have, of course, the crisis, and so we had to make it real very, very quickly. So in a matter of just a few days, we had the technology stood up. And within a few more days, we had our first customer. And we've been live for several weeks now and having, there's been some fits and starts, as you can imagine. But I think overall, very good success.
And was that developed and produced all internally with your IT resources at the DMV? Or did you have to bring in some outside industry partners to roll it out?
Yeah, so we have a lot of industry partners that are engaged in various facets of our modernization. So the good news is we already had those partners on board. We didn't have to go through a procurement process because they're already here doing this work on other areas for modernization. So we just redirected slightly some of their work to go focus on this particular area. So we had the advantage of already doing a digital transformation. And so since the folks were here, it made it very easy for us to get things kicked off.
Now, the size and breadth of the what would have been the field in California is extraordinary. So talk to us about how you handled that internal rollout to a vast, diverse, spread out team of the California DMV that, you know, is larger than, you know, many jurisdictions combined.
Yeah, that's been an ongoing saga. I mean, it's challenging, right? This is, in many cases, the first time anybody's used a ticketing system. They're very conventional. We walk in, you bring your paper, we sit across the aisle from you. And that works really, really well. And so introducing ticketing, you know, and using technology and uploading and downloading documents, I think, you know, of course, people do that in their personal life, but they never connected it to their life in the DMV. But the team has been, I think, fantastic at, okay, giving it a go and trying to so follow the instructions of what we're doing. And we were doing, I think, a pretty responsive job to, you know, fix things that were just not intuitive for them. But anyway, you're absolutely right. I mean, we're across 172 offices, and trying to get 172 offices with close to 6,000 people in the field to learn a new trick overnight was very, very challenging. And there's still some challenges today where, again, it's so far abroad from what they were doing before that, you know, some people maybe are not cut out for this, but we had other people that just took to it like a duck to water, and they were just opening the tickets, working them very, very effectively. And so you had this great disparity. If you look at sort of the metrics, you saw these handful of people that were really, really good at doing this, and other people that were still struggling with getting going. So it's been uneven, I think, to summarize it all up. But, you know, I think we're continuing to have improvements over time.
And any major surprises along the way? I mean, you're always going to hit, like you said, the fits and starts, the bumps along the road. What, you know, for fun's sake, what was the curveball that has come in? Go, oh, well, we'll tackle it. Didn't expect it, but let's go ahead and tackle this one now.
Well, I think there's maybe two curveballs. One is, you know, coming out of the sort of IT technology space, the base assumption that myself, as well as my chief technology officer had, or my chief digital transformation officer, I don't want to remove his title from him, but, you know, when he and I were working on this thing, we both assumed that, well, people have already seen a ticketing system. This would be, you know, a variation of what they already saw. And that was the first thing we kind of had to get re-level set on. Many people in our field offices and in that program hadn't really worked with these systems. So that was really the first one. The second thing is, you know, we have a bunch of legacy systems, which is probably not atypical in the DMV world. I think we have some of the oldest systems, not that it's a competition, but getting it so that we can actually, you know, complete the transaction, you know, in sort of this digital realm was a bit challenging, especially as it came to payment. We're structured in such a way that it makes it very hard to do the cashiering step when the data entry step was done somewhere else. So the biggest curveball was trying to get those, you know, get it so we can request payment from a customer and get it so we can actually then receive payment and apply it to that particular transaction. And that took a mix of people back at headquarters, where I'm located in Sacramento, and our people in the field had to coordinate some of this activity in very unusual ways, certainly in the early weeks until we've actually worked on a more elegant technological fix. So that's one aspect of it is, you know, don't underestimate the complexity of some of these legacy systems. And of course, don't underestimate, you know, the complexity of the change itself. And this change is still underway as we speak. So it's a big change, but, you know, the teams have embraced it. They understand this is good for Californians, and we're trying to do our best to, you know, be good public servants.
Sure. It's a big change, and to do a big change so fast is rather unprecedented in any government agencies, let alone the, you know, one the size of the California DMV. So that's what's really, you know, makes it all the more of a remarkable story that I think people are intrigued by.
Yes.
Steve, you know, you mentioned it a couple of times, so I just want to shift because there are folks listening and they're going, Steve Gordon, not a name I've heard much. You know, I knew there was a new person in charge of the California DMV. You mentioned you've come to the DMV from outside of state government. A lot of folks are listening, learning about you for the first time. Do you mind sharing just a little bit more about that background of that IT world before coming to the DMV?
Sure. I mean, my first job out of university was as an auditor for the County of San Diego. So I have some government service, but I was lured into technology, you know, back in the mid 80s, and have been, you know, worked at EDS, Electronic Data Systems, and subsequently went to Northwest Airlines, now Delta Airlines, did some technology development there. And then I moved at the sort of dawn of the internet age. I worked for a company called Cisco Systems, and Cisco is one of the largest providers of technology gear in the market today. And spent, you know, 18 plus years there, you know, running various businesses and doing a lot of acquisition work. Cisco grew through acquisition. And some of that acquisition work was really very similar to what we're doing here, where we're trying to get those pieces to work together within our divisions and our branches and trying to make everybody work as one team. And that's very common to what I did in some of the merger and acquisition work that I was responsible for operating these businesses post-acquisition. And then I did some of that. I did some consulting work that was adjacent to that that space. So I come with, you know, Silicon Valley technology understanding. The more important part, though, is, you know, the Rolodex. So that network of friends, when I have a complicated question about a technology or an approach, there's a whole bunch of people that really want to help. I mean, they're residents of California, they're taxpayers, and they're friends. I'm proud that they're my friends. And they've, you know, when I've called, reached out to them, say, how do you approach this problem? Or how should I think about that? They've been great. They, you know, they have nothing to gain by this. They're just trying to improve the state, and they've been extremely generous with their time. And I think that Rolodex has helped, and it's people, no disrespect to my new hometown of Sacramento, but they're not here. They're not thinking about how the government works. They're thinking about how should it work? And mm-hmm. they've been very, very good at helping us, you know, with good ideas and we things we've been able to embrace and be able to, you know, mobilize on fairly quickly.
And so what attracted you to make that shift from working in, you know, that exciting world of IT development, the mergers and acquisition, you're working on big, you know, household names like Cisco to shift to want to take a role in government service?
Yeah, I didn't. This was, I mean, as the story goes, my wife was reading the San Jose Mercury News. My prior residence was in San Jose. And she's reading the newspaper, and there's an article by one of the journalists in the newspaper saying, you know, essentially the title was, if you hate the DMV, you can run it. And so she hands me the newspaper, and she says, go read this article. And I read it, and at the bottom of the article, in the digital section, there was a link to say, go apply. So I looked at that and said, oh, what the heck? They're never going to call someone from Silicon Valley. I don't know anybody in Sacramento. And so I applied. I mean, it was, you know, multiple pages, typical government application. And, you know, a couple months later, like my phone's ringing from Sacramento, you know, area code 916. I'm thinking, who the heck could this be? Then you know, it was the, you know, the governor's appointment secretary. I was like, oh, whoops, because I did fill out that application. But, you know, once I sort of got involved with the interviews and discussions, and I had a good meeting with some of the senior levels of the governor's staff and with the governor himself, I mean, this is something I think that I'm excited to take on. I've read the public audits. There's been all these challenges in the state, Real ID, and a whole bunch of other things. But this is exactly what I did at Cisco for our mergers and acquisitions. I took these businesses and I tried to figure out, diagnose what was going wrong with them or what was going right with them, and how do I, you know, fix the wrong stuff and really, you know, use and leverage the good stuff. And so to me, this was sort of center of the fairway that of things that I've been doing for a number of years. So I'm so excited that the governor decided to select really a complete outsider. He didn't know me from anyone. And, you know, he joked at my my initial press conference that, you know, here's a guy that didn't know anybody in Sacramento and he actually wanted to do the job. And it's been exhilarating, just the amount of opportunity here and the ability to execute. I mean, people have stayed out of our way and they've allowed us to do what needs to get done.
Yeah, that is quite unusual that, you know, it's not completely unusual that someone would come from the outside. We've seen that happen. It doesn't always grow up from within the DMV, but to come in from the outside with, like you said, you didn't know the governor, let alone you didn't know anyone in Sacramento, as you say, you filled it out. You know, we always hear you don't get a new job by just sending in your resume. In this case, you proved that rule wrong in a very big way. That's really fascinating. So what's the, you have that view from the outside. How is your view of what the DMV was, might have been, or was being perceived by the public, your business partners in Silicon Valley? Where is it shifted or affirmed, I suppose, as you're now looking at it from the inside?
Yeah, no, great question, Ian. I read a number of things during the interview process, and they're painting these dire forecasts of, you know, low morale, low productivity, people not wanting to do a good job. And I understand that, look, I'm effectively, you know, the chief executive officer of the DMV. So people, when I ask them questions, people treat me differently than they might treat other people. But I've found our staff at the field level and all levels. And I make my way around the state and around our departments. People are excited. They are excited that, you know, we're going somewhere. We have a plan. And we're starting to stack up these accomplishments. And it's been just exciting to be part of a team and see a team that's excited to actually be headed somewhere. And we have a direction defined. And yeah, there's still a lot of uncertainty, but I think people are excited about the initial wins. They're excited about the impact that they see in their daily lives and our ability to execute. And that was the first thing that, you know, oh, you're gonna have this problem with all the people. And look, there's always challenges in a large organization. But I think I've been rewarded with a team that wants to be led. And my job is to make sure I get the leadership team aligned on, you know, our goals, our objective, our strategies, and the various initiatives. So that was the first thing we had to overcome. And the second thing I think was, you know, that governments can't do stuff fast. And that seems to be is yet another myth. I mean, it's my view is I think there's some lack of imagination. And, you know, my team, and as I mentioned, I've been very blessed with the Chief Digital Transformation Officer, Ajay Gupta. You know, he's been able to open our eyes about how we might approach things. And I've been able to make sure that we get things done, right? As a leader, and like basic management school, your job as a manager is to remove obstacles from your team's way. And that's my job. So I'm trying to get those obstacles out of the way so we can do what seems from an outsider's perspective to be the intuitively obvious things to improve our business. So I've been super, super blessed with a great team. And but that's been the biggest myth that these people are not going to be able to do this, or they're not motivated. That has not been my experience.
And have you had the opportunity to go back to your Silicon Valley buddies and say, hey, not everything you're hearing or reading is actual reality. There are some, really good folks in Sacramento and spread out all over the state, really trying to make this thing work.
Yeah, I speak with several of them, frequently enough, and some of them reach me out on email. They follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook and so on. So I get feedback all the time. There's a group of friends from my high school days that meet for breakfast once a month in my hometown, and they share their DMV stories. And that's how I learn. I learn through them about, what's happening, how things are perceived from where they're sitting. And I also, I respond to customers' email. I understand mm-hmm. that's atypical inside of state government, that the, mm-hmm. The director like me would talk to regular people. It's like, well, of course I'm going to talk to regular people. How else are you going to learn about where they're struggling and so on? And they've been fantastic as well. The fact that somebody writes them back, absorbs their energy. Sometimes it's too much energy, but you absorb their energy, and there's always a nugget in there. It's like, oh crap, maybe if we fix this, or if we looked at it through another lens. And I've even reached out to some of the folks. For example, we've closed some of our driver tests, and I said, hey, if we want to test maybe a new way to do this or a new way that, would you be game to participate? And they're like, yeah, sign me up. Hmm. And so I think we have a bunch of eager people in the state looking for ways to help the state. And this is like the first avenue they've seen that the state is asking them, what do you think? And so I think it's been very powerful from my friends, and also from my new friends in the state that have been, reaching out to me directly.
That's really very interesting. The last topic I just want to pivot to, I'd be remiss to not bring it up. It's kind of gotten on the back burner with the attention on, the COVID response, but the convergence of your background in technology in Silicon Valley and the California DMV is very much in the space of self-driving vehicles and automation. California DMV has a very rich history in providing international leadership in this space. I was wondering, now as the country and the world shifts in this health crisis, if you have any initial thoughts about how does it impact where that technology and that revolution was heading?
I think it's going to change how the industry perceives itself. I'm not a prognosticator on autonomous vehicles, but, I think they're looking at this market in now a way to be touchless in delivery and provide new services faster, perhaps, than maybe providing ridership. So that market's going to shape up differently. But I think from our role as a safety organization, our job is to continue to refine what I think are our world-leading regulations, and these are things that were crafted and drafted, about 5 years ago, is now get them into like the next generation and say, okay, so what have we learned? What has the industry taught us? And where is technology today about how would we, measure and monitor and regulate the safety of this industry? And, and I'm a new set of eyes. I've brought in some suggestions and, that we're working with the industry to say, how might we better, manage the, kind of the efficacy of these programs. And today, right, we have this, looking at disengagement reports. That's kind of this very blunt instrument to see if a car, if the safety driver had to take it over. But, that's not enough. I think there's a whole bunch of instrumentation in that vehicle. There are things we're thinking about, even for our human driving test, to use telemetry that you might use in a driver safety program. Could we use that inside of an AV? And so we can be able to get objective data, not from the manufacturer telling us, but just from just putting it on a mobile device in a car about how well the vehicle is traversing its route and how safe it appears. No different than perhaps how we would one day look at a new driver and say, how safe is that driver? Those programs exist today. We just have to think about this technology in new ways, and we can apply it to an AV or apply it to a 16-year-old that starts driving in our state. There's a lot of cool things we can do with existing technology.
And what I what's exciting about hearing you say it that way is it comes back to that same premise. Is it, whether it's the driver or it's the technology or the vehicle, is it prepared to operate safely in our environment, on our public roadways? And that really comes back to that core mission of, you know, of all of us and all our agencies, which is that safety mission.
That's absolutely right.
Well, Steve, I appreciate you taking some time out of your day today. I know folks will be interested to get to know you more. I wish you were joining the community in a year where we could all be together and shake hands, but hopefully that can occur in the not so distant future.
I look forward to it, Ian. Thank you for your time today.
Great. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.